ba-da-ba-ba.
Ba-da-ba-ba.
All right.
I'm Ashley Capps, founder and CEO of AC Entertainment, and I'm on Promoter 101.
Hey, here we go. It's episode 125 of Promoter 101. I'm Luke Pierce. Joined as always, my good friend Dan Steinberg. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, we are back, and somehow we did it again, convincing people to talk into a microphone to us when they wouldn't talk to us in public normally, but what the hell? WME CJ Strock, the Strock Man, is with us this episode, and the talent just seems to be endless. We keep pulling great names out of a hat. I don't know where they're coming from, but they keep saying yes, and truly grateful for the industry supporting the podcast.
That indeed. And later on, we'll have three questions with the Ardmore Music Halls from Philadelphia, Graham Knoll.
It's great that he came. We met him at the podcast in Philly the other day. That was a whole lot of fun. We should really do more campuses. Look, that was fun. Berkeley was fun. Really enjoy that.
More of those for sure.
Plus, you're going to have some news of what's going on in the industry. And there's a whole lot of stuff going on. People are getting bought.
Got some mergers. We got the Grammys this week, Dan. You know, music's biggest night happened earlier.
Things are going on all over the place.
Rod Essick. I work at CAA. I'm on Promoter 101.
Have you missed any of the Promoter 101 past podcasts? Dude, you're really letting us down. All right, so here's the thing. We're going to make this easy for you because we love you. So if you promise to call your mother, I'm going to tell you that you can go to promoter101.net, click on episodes, and you can see like all of the past episodes, and you can catch up whenever you want. You could cherry pick the ones you want. Say you want to hear, I don't know, Michael Rapino, episode 70. Just scroll down to 70 and click on it right there for you. It's that easy.
It's magic.
This week, can we suggest episode 76?
It was a doozy, Dan. We had Live Nation's Rich Best walking us through competing for shows in the City of Angels. We had Festival Republic's Melvin Benn teaching us how politics got him into the heart of the festival business. And Billboard Power 100 player UTA's Natalia Toscan shed some light about her path of moving to America, becoming an attorney, and her current gig at one of the biggest agencies in the world. And we also had Mills Entertainment's Michael Mills turning the tables on Steiny.
Can we talk a little bit just listener, host, like one-on-one kind of thing? So here's the thing. You haven't dropped us a review, sent us a note, subscribed. You're really letting us down here. Me and your mom want to see you try harder. Really, really devote your time here. Put your head down. And then maybe we'll talk about some extra special things for you later down the road.
That's a solid painting of some Jewish guilt there, Dan.
Playing those heartstrings, Luke. Please subscribe.
Just subscribe.
Drop a review. It's not that hard. Do it.
Do it.
Call your mother.
Oi.
Hi, this is Noelle Argest from APA, and I'm on Promoter 101.
News of the week.
Please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, my very good friend, to report on the news and the happenings and all the goes-abouts in the industry, Mr. Lucas Pierce.
It's time for News of the Week. Grammys. Music's biggest night was last Sunday, and we'd be remiss if we didn't at least highlight some of the award winners on this week's news in case you didn't watch the four-hour-long broadcast on Sunday evening. Among the biggest winners were Brandi Carlile, Lady Gaga, and Casey Musgraves. Ariana Grande picked up her first Grammy, and Drake picked up his fourth and was also cut off in his congratulatory speech. Here's the big four. Album of the Year going off to Golden Hour by Casey Musgraves. Record of the Year going off to This Is America by Childish Gambino, who also picked up the same award for Song of the Year. And Best New Artist went to Dua Lipa. On Thursday morning, Universal Music Company parent Vivendi announced that UMG had a record year, posting a second consecutive year of 10% growth, and that Vivendi would proceed with the sale of the company. UMG's revenues were up to $7.15 billion, due mostly to the 40% growth in subscription and streaming revenues. Downloads were off 23.5%, physical off 16.1%. Publishing was also a bright spot, growing to 15% to $1.1 billion in revenue on the backs of growing performance rights and sync rates. While they didn't lay out a deadline for sale, Vivendi said their sale process is on track timing-wise. Finally, Live Nation announced its first foray into fairs with the acquisition of a majority stake in Nesty Events Marketing, the talent buying firm based in Nashville, Tennessee, which will immediately brand into Nesty Live. The new venture will facilitate talent buying and event production services for festivals, fairs, and corporate clients. The Nesty Live team will be based in Nashville and report to Gil Cunningham, president of Nesty. That'll do it for News of the Week.
Fred Rosen, president and CEO of Red Carpet Entertainment. We're on Promoter 101.
Up next, we're thrilled to be joined by guests from our recent trip to Philadelphia. From the Ardmore Music Hall, Graham Noel is here to ask us three questions.
Graham Noel, welcome to the podcast, sir.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Are you ready to play our lovely game?
Indeed, I am. When you guys were in Philly the other week, we talked a bit about this, but I thought the masses could use your insight. Wanted to ask if you had any advice on pitching yourself to a new agent or a band that you haven't worked with yet.
It's always tricky, and I guess it depends on credibility, right? Like how long you've been in the business, how well your rep is built up. At this point, I can point to several big agents and say, call them. They'll tell you that I can properly fuck up a show on a high level. But no, I mean, it's a big deal to be able to say, hey, I've worked with this act or I've worked with that act. Because being able to say, whether you've promoted the Avett Brothers or a Godsmack date or a Luke Bryan show, somebody big thinks that you know how to do this and very easily checked with their people. Hey, did he fuck that up or did it all work out? And usually if people aren't bitching, that's a good sign. No one's complaining. You must be decent at it. That's the hope.
For sure. And as an independent promoter, a young one at that, definitely do a ton of proactive outreach. So I appreciate the insight.
Yeah, I guess I didn't answer the question from getting into the business if you don't have credibility yet, huh? You know, my favorite thing was how I used to call agents. When I first got into the business and I was working from a bedroom, pretending I was in a room with other people and no assistants or whatever, just in a room by myself, you know, but acting as if, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do remember my pitch was this, and you develop it over time, right? Because you do it a lot. You have this thing, and I wanted to work with every agency. I built a list of every major agency, whether they were mom and pop agencies or they were major agencies, but I wanted to work with every agency at least once in my first year of promoting. So I'd made this massive Excel list and I was trying to knock off who I hadn't worked with yet. Because I figured once I got the first show with them, that would open the doors for more things. And my pitch to them was this: look, let me do your babies. I want to do the acts no one else is asking you for, the acts that are going to be favors for somebody else. If I do a good job, maybe you'll let me do something else. If I fuck it up, worst case scenario is I fucked up a baby band that no one else did and I got them through the market and got you your play. But hopefully I can show you a return on this and you'll bring me into more of your baby bands as you're building them up and we can build more acts together, as I believe lightning strikes many times in the same place. So if you happen to have discovered a big act already and you're already a reputable agency, I'm thinking there's more to follow. So I would call and beg the Pinnacles and all of the other agents, Twin Towers back then, Tahoe Agency. I was like, sell me the twist offs. If I do a good job, maybe you'll let me do the Strangers and maybe that'll lead to the Cherry Pop and Daddies and Skank and Pickle, you know? And that's music to agents' ears. Like, stop asking me for the biggest band I fucking have. They already have a relationship in the market. And why would I fuck over my friend who built them and took the risk and give them to you, who I don't even know if can promote your way out of a paper bag? So I was here saying, don't give me your big act. Give me your baby act that even your friends shouldn't have to do. And if I break the band and you think I do a shit job, you're probably going to take them from me and give them to your friend anyway, which happened in a lot of cases. But in some cases, some people were like, oh, wow, this kid's excited. He really wants to be involved. And it was music to their ears. Hey, let me promote your baby bands. I remember John Harrington was like, when I was so young, gave me Black Happy. And they were a great ska band from the Northwest. And it was like, dude, I think this band could be 311. And he had broken 311. So I was like, cool, give me Black Happy. And maybe I can turn them into 311. And maybe if I do a good job, maybe you'll let me promote 311, which is really what I had in the back of my mind. But I got in the door with him on that. And some 25 years later, he sold me 311.
Wow, that's awesome.
It did take 25 years.
Well, I appreciate that advice. Definitely going to be something I take to heart here.
What else you got for us?
So on the other side of things, say an agent is pitching you a band that you have no idea who they are. Maybe you never heard of them, or maybe it's an agent you haven't worked with yet. How does an agent grab your attention for their baby band?
It's all about the relationship in this industry. The acts jump back and forth, but it's all about that hang and the vibe and who you really want to do business with. And we all want to do business with our friends, right? So when an agent that is reputable, that we have a long-term relationship and a vibe already built, a rapport, if you will, calls and says, this is the next one. Will you do them for me? If they sell me their other stuff, man, and I'm on their team, I'm in. I'm all in. You take care of me, I'm taking care of you.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody calls you out of the blue that you've never heard of before, it's got to start with the music and it's got to start with the pitch. It's like, does the band have followers? Is there anybody on Twitter? Is there anybody on Facebook? Is there anybody on Instagram following these guys? Are they getting traction on Spotify? Who's listening to this act? Or are they just a local band from another market that doesn't even have their girlfriend or parents coming to support them in a different city? Because that means, wow, no one knows who they are. They're worse than a local band. They have no love. Many, many, many cases, their first time in, they have absolutely nothing going on for them in the market. So you are their entire support team locally in the market. And most acts won't even send you posters anymore. We don't get any of that stuff anymore. Now you get a link that no one ever clicks on.
Well, that's also helpful advice. And my last question, here in Philly, the competition, of course, is really stiff and there's rumblings of more venues opening in the next few years. Just wondering how you yourself have approached new competition in the market.
If we're not evolving to the new state of business every day in the market, we're dying. You have to learn to evolve. What was great. But what is the future. And if you don't know how to deal with the future, you're just fucking dead. Business changes, the fans change, the consumer changes, the way we fucking accept our music and our technology is different. I was talking a minute ago about sending out ad packs. It's like, now we do it digitally. So much easier, so much quicker. There are things that you evolve with over time. We used to fax things around the country. It's like, I can't remember the last time we got a fax here at the office, and we do still have a fax line. Technology changes. The competition changes. If you're not ready for that, you're just dead in your tracks. You got to be open to new things. And I got to tell you, as someone has seen going from promoting shows in high school and working at my sandwich shop job and then going to load in, still smelling like mustard afterwards and working till 2 o'clock in the morning promoting shows to now being with a company that is much bigger, you have to learn to evolve with what you have. As long as your passion's there, it's great, but you got to be open to it. The guy in the market isn't necessarily your competitor. Maybe he's a resource. Guys like Jesse Lundy in your market are amazing at that. You know, it's like they work with everybody. They have relationships with everybody. You look at John Hampton and Jeff Gordon, who were competitors, and now they're on the same team. They evolved, and now they're just killing it in that market. What do you think, Luke?
Sure. Well, I think that competition in the live space is something that every indie is going to have to face from time to time, particularly with the consolidation that's happening from perspective with Live Nation. It's going to be between Live Nation and AEG. There's always going to be an 800-pound gorilla in the market. So finding partners to expand beyond just yourself, just your team, whether that be a venue, whether that be artist, or whether that be a brand to bring into the fold to stretch and grow your resources of your reach, I think is particularly important for regional promoters who are operating in a single marketplace. It's tough to compete at scale for indies, for sure. What Dan and Jason have done certainly is a testament to the work that can be done. But I think the first thing that Dan would tell you, that identifying the right partnerships is a large part of that strategy. Dan and Jason have done a phenomenal job of identifying partners locally to work with when they come into new marketplaces. Great venues, great GMs across the board. You know, they've identified those partnerships. And I think that's been the key to maintaining a competition in an ever-consolidated marketplace.
Does that help, Graham? Does any of those ramblings do anything for you?
Absolutely. I really appreciate the advice.
So what's coming up on the books that you're excited about in your hometown of Philly?
Well, here at the Ardmore Music Hall, we got a ton of awesome shows, lots of diverse talent coming through, one being Stephen Malkmus and May, Mike Doty, Bill Frisell coming through. And I'm doing lots of weird metal shows at my 200 cap club, which I'm stoked about.
Hey, make sure that you ask Mike Doty to stand up and let the man go free.
I will.
Graham Noel here, coming to you from Philly. Thanks for being on Promoter 101.
Thanks so much for having me.
Nice to have the next generation represented on the show. Thanks so much, Graham, for playing along.
Hi, it's Paola Palazzo from Live Nation Concerts Canada on Promoter 101.
Tweet. 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 Of the week.
It's time for some Steiny Wisdom, a.k.a. the Tweets of the Week. Let's start here, Dan. You had a really good tweet here. Let's start with road managers always say it was in the rider.
You know what? 90% of the shows don't have a rider finished at the time we confirm or offer on the show. So why don't you shove that up your ass?
Ouch. I'm not an agent telling you for weeks your date is the worst selling show of the tour.
But only to see all of the Polestar dates report, finding out that you really were one of the better dates. Agents lie, Luke. Agents lie.
I don't believe that one bit.
I'm not saying that all agents lie. There are some very reputable agents out there, the Andy Summers and the Brian Hills of this world. The level of like respectability that those guys carry is something that you would try to achieve to. Those guys are honorable as hell. And then there are the rest of them.
How about being told by the venue that the act has just confirmed a date to another promoter?
Agent must have forgotten to share that information with me, huh?
Yeah, that's about right.
They didn't lie. They just withheld that bullshit. Thanks, guys.
That'll do it for Steiny Wisdom. You can follow Dan on Twitter. He's at the Jew.
Hey, this is Kevin French, and I'm on Promoter 101.
In our featured interview this week, we've got from WME, CJ Strock, who is on a massive run at the moment. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome, CJ.
So happy to be here.
You've had a phenomenal career. You hooked up with Johnny Podell in the early days with Ed Evolution Talent, right?
Yes.
Massive agency with some of the biggest agents in the world. Zedek was there. Sam Kirby was there. Nat Farnham. Who else was in that building?
Craig Brock, Phil Eigenthal, Eric Podwall at the time, Eric Wilson.
Some big names.
Great learning experience. Perfect place to be in your 20s.
Big, big fucking vibe over there. Then that kind of went its own way, and Johnny formed Podell Talent.
Yep. So Evolution Talent lasted about 4 years. Johnny and I went, started Podell Talent Agency, did another 10 years. It was a nice run.
Okay. So in the time, you started basically as an assistant early days, right? And you developed into a junior agent and then a full-on agent. And then when the agency sold to William Morris, you remained with the agency and kept a lot of the roster as Johnny went on to check out other interests like yoga and stuff, right?
Yep, exactly. Good summary.
Some of the acts that Johnny had been involved with that you became on point for, the Yalmans and Greg Gallman's career and a bunch of those acts in the genre. You had the chance to work with like Peter Gabriel and Cyndi Lauper, amazing, legendary, iconic acts that you got to touch.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. My favorite piece of the heritage scene is definitely the Allman Brothers Band.
Love me some Allman Brothers. So you're at William Morris Endeavor, and you've been there now for what, 3 years?
4 years.
4 years. And you are the RA for a handful of very cool bands. One of the best in the world, Marcus King Band, is totally kind of happening right now.
Marcus is great. There's a lot of folks that want to be in his shoes at 22, for sure. Another young guitar slinger, Brandon Tasniederauer at 15. He's fantastic.
He's 15 years old.
15, yep. He started his way around the scene in New York when he was 9. And then he went into the School of Rock business. And Andrew Lloyd Webber casted him in the original casting of School of Rock on Broadway.
Yeah.
And when he was 14, going into high school, he said to his parents, hey, listen, you know, I'm doing 6 shows a week. I don't have time to do anything else. And I want to put a band together, play my own tunes, write songs and so on. And he did not renew his contract. And here we are.
Oh, awesome, man. A kid that put music first. You got to like that.
There we go.
Who else are you working with right now?
Carl Denson's Tiny Universe, Blackberry Smoke, one that we're very excited about, Yola. Yola has her debut album coming out in February, produced by Dan Auerbach. This album is great. Any of your listeners out there who are UK-based, she did a fantastic set on the Jules Holland Holiday Hootenanny on New Year's Eve. It's gotten a lot of praise over the last week.
You're involved with some of these great acts. This is one of the things that the agencies are moving to lately that I really like, especially the bigger agencies, the team thing. So it's not like everyone has, this is my RA, that is my RA. In the case of Marcus King, you and Braden are the co-RAs on this act. So you got him working it from Nashville, where it's a completely different scene and completely different relationships. And guys like Jay Williams right there to like be bugging in his ears for support or what have you, you know, for some of those bigger tours. And you're in New York, where you've got a whole different set of circle, even in the internal William Morris room, the different circles and relationships by having two agents involved, or three in some cases, is a huge thing.
Yeah, and that's just domestically too. Internationally speaking, we've also got Akiko, who is in
King
the middle,
Rogers.
Yep, who's in the middle of Australia and Asia. And we've also got David Bradley and Johnny Greenfield. So, I mean, that's five agents right there touching one client who definitely reaps the benefits. And of course, the entire balance of the WME team too.
The available resources in your offices are just insane. Just internally, you guys could hold your own conference just for William Morris.
Yeah, and the leadership's awesome. So, I mean, it's great to have such well-respected folks around the table at any given minute.
It's fair to say that you're into the jammy, live, rootsy kind of stuff. Big Americana, like you like guys that can perform fucking live.
Absolutely.
If you call me with an act and they're on your roster, I know automatically this band's going to fucking wail live.
Absolutely. And there's one band called Bishop Gunn that Braden and I also work on, and Akiko too. They're fantastic.
They were just on Marcus King's tour, right? They were main support?
Marcus dates. Uh-huh. They've done Blackberry Smoke dates. They're going to be with Slash in Europe. Across the board, just flat out rocking. And the greatest dudes, of course, as well, which make it particularly cool.
So what does it take for an act to get your attention?
I mean, you nailed it before. I mean, the live show. You know, what I want to be able to say is that you don't need to check them out, because I've checked them out, and I promise you they're going to rock.
I promise you.
I promise you. Just like you said.
Here's an awesome thing. You went from being a mid-size independent, because Evolution had some fairly massive acts, pretty big independent, but an independent. Then you went to being a small mom and pop shop with some really big acts.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're one of the biggest agencies in the world, which actually seems to have a really great ethos. Everybody seems to be really happy over there. But
absolutely.
How do you go from going from an indie to working from this massive corporation?
Well, you know, I believe Mark said to me when I started.
Geiger.
Absolutely, that don't be concerned, because it was definitely going to take, you know, a year to 18 months to get acclimated in terms of the systems. The systems that were in place at Podel Talent were all systems that I put in place, which were very simple, that didn't need to make sense to anybody except for me. You know, I said, Coach, I am in. I'll make it happen. You know, I'll be up and running, you know, in 3 months. And he was right. You know, I put 100% of energy into the transition process. But, you know, until you get to figure out how it all works seamlessly, it took about a year or so. And now I'm totally comfortable. It's second nature. And the folks that I spend my daily life with on the field are just fantastic.
So you have this massive agency that has film, TV, music, branding, licensing, what have you. All of these other arms that an independent agency doesn't have, bringing in all these different worlds. How does that help your clients to have these other branches of the company available to you?
Right. Well, I mean, well, each client's got, you know, now exposure into each space that you mentioned. So, you know, before it was solely one silo and one hyphen. Now they have an opportunity to be real assets in other spaces. You know, and also with the parent company Endeavor, I mean, it's the opportunities and exposure is unlimited.
So what kind of advice can you give for some of the younger guys getting in the business wanting to be agents? Because you've built such a solid reputation as a guy that like cares about his acts and his promoters.
Absolutely.
You're the guy that doesn't burn people. Like, and you call and say, hey, let's do this. How do you build that reputation for longevity like you have?
There's a certain level of value to being thorough in terms of your thoughts and your progressions and, you know, what you want to do. You know, you put your mind to it and you do it. Things work out. Things don't work out. The bottom line is you want your partners involved to understand that you're in it for the long haul and you're not going anywhere. And the stability of that's very important. My advice to either students or younger professionals in our business is to really give yourself the opportunity to really get to know what you're doing. And no matter what you're doing, whether it be ticket counts or redlining contracts or scanning documents, whatever it is, just do it absolutely perfectly. Do it the best you can do. Spend the most time on it possible. Get it done. And, you know, as you grow and your bandwidth expands and your maturity expands, you have an opportunity to pick up the next piece and just don't get ahead of yourself.
Can we talk about the Almonds?
Of course.
I think there's more than a couple people that would consider the Almond Brothers one of the greatest live bands of all time.
Absolutely.
You had the opportunity to become part of that camp, and the vibe of that team, similar to the Grateful Dead, is you're either in or you're out. And if you're in, you're part of it, right? Working on that team and part of that family, getting to be involved in the Beacon streak of shows and booking some of those last dates and booking Greg Allman Band's dates, the sheer brand and keeping things in a theme that have the tone of the Allman Brothers all the way through. There's a lot of responsibility in figuring out how to present a Greg Allman show or an Allman Brothers show so it's correct in the spirit of an Allman Brothers show.
Yep. And, you know, we're keeping the legacy of the Allman Brothers Band moving forward. The band is a partner with Live Nation in two festivals that the band curates called, one called the Peach Festival in Scranton, and the other is called the Wanee Festival in Florida. Those are like-minded events. It's one of those situations where the fan base is still an Allman Brothers Band fan base. So we do very well out of the box without even a lineup because the fan base understands that it's going to be credible business and a valid ticket for them to buy. There's also a Allman Brothers Band museum in Macon, Georgia called the Big House. And the Big House is actually a home where the band and their families lived for many years in the 70s, where we've taken the home and we've restored it and created a museum out of it. So there's actually some of the bedrooms are still remain intact the way they were when they occupied the building. And it's pretty cool.
I had the privilege of getting to do a great number of Greg Allman Band dates around the country. We weren't the tour promoter, but I don't know, we probably did a good 60, 70% of the last couple of years of
yes,
the dates.
Absolutely.
And Greg's team was very thorough. They knew exactly what they wanted. They wanted to play beautiful performing arts centers. They wanted seated shows. They wanted good sound. They wanted the crowd to be able to see the players actually playing and nothing distracting from that. So the ethos of the act has always been amazing. Very menschy. I remember a couple shows canceling, and sometimes they make them up and they'd replay them and, you know, whatever the expenses, whatever. And occasionally, just the routing didn't work to make it up. And I remember Greg canceling a couple dates that we just couldn't make up, whatever the reason. But I got a check in the mail for every cent that we put out on the show, the venue deposit, the ads, and they didn't have to. They weren't on the hook for that. It was like, wow, above and beyond. Like, who does that?
That's the spirit of the world here, you know? See, that's the Allman Brothers Band family in terms of they had a career which, you know, in 2019 is 50 years. And there's a reason that they were touring through Gregory through 2017 and the Almonds through 2014. It's because they treated people kindly and fairly.
I remember getting a phone call from you. We were working on a West Coast run, and it was Greg's book had just come out. Beautiful, small performing arts centers. I think when you called, you're like, NPR appropriate rooms, I think was how you described it. It's like, what's the room in each market NPR would pick? We set up this list for all of these different markets, and you called back with your highlights of what where you wanted to see offers for, and remembered you wanted to play the Palace of Fine Arts in San Francisco, and I was cracking up. I was like, dude, you're never going to be able to sell me an Allman Brothers show in San Francisco. That's never going to work. It's like, no, it's the right room. It's like, you can't sit at the Fillmore for this. The Sonic's too big. We want to go small. This is the right room. He's like, build the offer. I think they're going to confirm it. I feel it. Like, the Fox is the normal right play, but this is special. It's intimate. He wants an intimate play. All right. So I built the offer, and I remembered like calling him. I was like, here's your offer. And yeah, we confirmed, I don't know, the Balboa in San Diego and probably the Crest in Sacramento and was the Moore in Seattle, whatever. It was like all the normal suspects, right? But San Francisco is like Allman Brothers Fillmore just seemed like a given, right? It's like the show's never going to confirm. And I remember that moment. It's like you're going down the list confirming dates. It's like, yeah, he's like, okay, confirm the Palace San Francisco. I'm like, promoting Greg Allman in San Francisco? Are you sure, man? Are you sure politically this is going to work?
It was a great night. It was awesome.
I remember seeing more people on the side of the stage because there's just like so many Allman Brothers fans in the Bay. And we only had so many fixed seats. So when they turned in the guest list that night, 35 tickets for you guys per you guys releasing down from 50. What do I do? Like, man, put them on the side of the stage. It's cool. Like, really? It's like, yeah.
Set up some chairs, right?
It was the
right
most insane.
Right.
Yeah, it was. You couldn't move on the side of the stage. It was packed. But it was the coolest thing ever. It was like one of those. You just knew it was special. And I remember Greg walking off stage just like, there's a whole lot of people on that stage.
Our only mistake was we should have booked four. That's our only mistake.
It was awesome.
It was awesome.
You just don't get much cooler than that.
Pretty special for me, too.
Nobody ever leaves an Allman Brothers show unhappy.
Nope. And trust me, I wish there was more of them.
Yeah. And obviously the legacy continues with some of the other bands. And when you see Tedeschi Trucks, you definitely feel that Derek is
fantastic,
carrying on that spirit. I don't know. There's a better band on the road right now.
Oh, they're so good. What a great band. Yeah, and we're seeing a lot of that, too, with both Blackberry and Marcus, too, in terms of growing into that space.
So Blackberry Smoke, seeing some really solid success. You know the band is great live. They got the goods. But the fans
Absolutely.
Don't always know, and sometimes it takes longer for them to catch up.
Yep.
And it seems like the fans are finally catching on.
They're catching up. I mean, you know, they were in the past have toured somewhat of a country model with on weekends only.
Right, which makes it hard to get to the West Coast if you can only do weekends from the South.
Exactly. So that's what, when we came in last fall, we said that's the number one thing that needs to change. So if we want to build a career like the Allman Brothers Band, we need to be able to get the band on the road for a month at a time and spend quality time hitting all the markets.
To go back to the Almonds for 1 second, when you have the residency thing going at the Beacon and you guys were doing however many 200 and whatever, right?
Yep.
How far in advance were you guys booking those shows?
Well, you know, it wasn't like it is now. There's proof of concept with going on sale with summer amphitheater tours in November or October of the year before. It was never that early. The Beacon run in March would traditionally go up probably in November or so. In today's standard, that would probably be September at the latest. For 15 shows in March at the same venue, there's no way, you know, we would probably shoot for September. Give a chance for the summer to get out of the way. And then the summer tour was definitely did not go up by any means until maybe April, which if it was now, that would go up in November, probably.
So dates were a little bit more readily available back then.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I think that the ticket buyers are now used to buying further in advance too. And also the marketing is just way different too. I mean, that was still very print and radio based, which is just not the case any longer.
Print advertising. Do you miss it?
I'll tell you one thing about the Almonds is that the artwork was pretty cool and those guys did a lot of date specific art. So it was pretty cool to see a full page and a weekly full color, full page.
I think, you know, the industry misses some of that artwork. And I think we see it a little bit in the t-shirts these days, like from the shows, but
and still on socials and stuff. Pretty cool. But like, you know, as a fan to be able to go in and pick up your weekly paper and open it up and have a full page multicolored ad of a huge mushroom or, you know, some forest type elements, you know, it was pretty cool.
You're a kid of the 80s and 90s like me. Going to the record store was an experience that our kids won't have.
Right.
Camping out for tickets, an experience our kids won't have. You used to go to record stores. That was the destination, right?
You used to flip through. Ticketron or Ticketmaster used to have a outlet there at the record store. You know, I used to just sit there and listen to what people were buying to learn about what music was coming to town because I didn't have, you know, the computers weren't what they are today. Phones obviously weren't that way. But in the 80s, I mean, I would go to the record store and just listen to people, you know, whomever go up and buy tickets. I remember one specific opportunity in Cincinnati where I grew up, where Paul McCartney was coming to town. And I had just got my first Beatles album. And I heard some guy go buy a Paul McCartney ticket for the Riverfront Stadium at the desk. And I actually went up to the desk and I said, hey, you know, is it true Paul McCartney's coming to town? And then I think the guy just looked at me and was like, you know, where have you been? You know, that was the coolness of a record store.
I can't say that I've ever had a more casual conversation than you and me have had. And if anyone were here, they could see that I'm like totally sprawled out across the couch. I could talk to you for hours, man.
Friends.
I want to thank you so much for taking time and talking to us on Promoter 101.
Yeah, listen to Promoter 101. See you guys.
Strachman is one of my favorite of all time. He's a team player and he's just such a good dude. Thrilled that we finally got him here on Promoter 101.
Patty Ann Tarleton. I'm overseeing Canada for Ticketmaster today, and I'm on Promoter 101.
That'll do it for episode 125 of Promoter 101. Big thanks to everybody tuning in, as well as our guests from WME, CJ Strock, from Philadelphia and the Ardmore Music Hall, Graham Knoll. Great podcast, Dan. If you like this podcast or want to hear another guest on here, you got some ideas or just, you know, want to chat about the weather, you can email Dan and I, hit us at steiny@promoter101.net.
You can ask us anything you want there. If you need a best man for your wedding, Luke is a great best man, I would assume.
I am a great best man. I've done it a couple times. I give a great speech. Everybody cries. It's awesome.
So when you do the speech and you don't have Connor there to edit it, how does that work?
I'm able to move people to tears, Dan.
I have no doubt of that, Luke. I have absolutely no doubt of that. I bet you give a great best man speech. Do you download that at like bestmanspeech.com?
You know what? I steal a lot from other speeches that I've either written or the things that I like. I'll send you an example, Dan.
Awesome. And we'll get that up on our socials. Also, you know, if you need somebody to like entertain at a bar mitzvah, Luke does a hell of a havanagila.
No magic tricks though, Dan. Don't believe in magic.
No magic from Luke, but what the hell? Just having him there is going to bring magic to the whole event. Anyway, we'll be back Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. on the coast, midnight in London town.
And we're going to be joined on episode 126 of the podcast. We won't be in London at that point. Or will you already be in London at that point, Dan? When's your flight out there?
It's March. We got a couple weeks.
Yes, it's GMT plus 5 for you East Coast people. We'll see you Monday, 5 o'clock Pacific. We're going to be joined by the City Winery's Shlomo Lipitz.
We will be. Until then, we're wishing you sold-out shows for the weeks to come. Cheers!
Cheers. Get it.
I'm Andy Rowe with AEG Presents. I'm the Regional Director of Marketing here in the Pacific Northwest, and we're on Promoter 101.